So, this morning, I wanted to continue in our neighboring series, where Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And he called it the greatest commandment. Somebody asked him, Lord, which is the greatest commandment? And the guy who asked him that was a lawyer. He was an expert in the Hebrew law, okay? And he was kind of trying to test Jesus out to pick one over the other. And Jesus said that it was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then he said, and the second one is like it. The second one is the same. The second one, love your neighbor as yourself. And then he said, the entire law and the prophets is summed up in these two. What that means is this entire book to this point, all the law, which is the law books of Moses, and the prophets, which is most of the rest, except for the poetry, all the law and the prophets hang on these two, depend on these two, are based on these two. And love your neighbor. And then the bottom part, no strings attached. No strings attached. Because it's not uncommon for churches and Christians to act like they love others, to try to get them to come to church, or to have some big, you know, I'm going to love my neighbor because my neighbor is a plumber and I need some plumbing. And so there are strings attached. And many times that's what we do. I told you a story last week about my daughter-in-law, Kristen, and she was so excited about a new friend who wanted a play date and all of this, and she was coming all the way from New Hampshire. And I said, yeah, Kristen, she's most likely in multi-level marketing because that seems to be the only people who do that now to try to connect with others. No, it's not. Grandpa, it's not. Don't say that. Then she went and met him at East Point that the kids could play and sat her down and told her all about how she could join this, I think it was selling makeup or something, and she had the right personality, and she could drive a car like hers, and she could do it on her own time and all that. And I remember Kristen coming home being like, she didn't want to be my friend. She just wanted me to sell makeup. And I was like, strings attached. So we've been talking about being neighbors, neighboring, what that means. And this morning, we're primarily going to be in Galatians 6, verses 9 and 10. And then we're going to be in Mark 4, 3 through 9, and 14 through 20. And the key thought that I want you to hang on to this moment and this morning, neighboring isn't just a moment. It's a lifestyle. It's living like Jesus. When we're loving our neighbors as ourselves, it's not to get them to do something. It's us becoming more like Jesus, who continually gave. And then let people decide. People ask questions. People, as that relationship was developed. And so in week number one, I challenged you. I said, I want you to go out and learn the names of three neighbors. Neighbors meaning people you pass often. Maybe it's somebody at work that you don't really know. Maybe it's that receptionist you walk by every day. Maybe it's somebody else who you see every day. But those neighbors. Learn the names. I told you last week, in my neighborhood, I'm like a golden retriever. Or I'm like my grand dog over there, the puppy corgi that I'm sure you guys are all going to want to meet after. That's Lady Matilda von Wigglebottom back there. We call her Tilly. A 7-month-old puppy, so you're going to have to say, no bite. And so these neighbors that you have, they're everywhere. So we talked, learn those three names. I told you that in my neighborhood, even though I'm a golden retriever, I had some people I couldn't seem to get to know them. And then one of them across the street, this woman who had red hair and was about this tall. And I called her, I didn't call it to her name, to her face, but I called her Big Red. And so when I'm talking to Robin, I'd be like, oh, well, Big Red was out in the yard today and she was doing this. And then down the road, there's Shy Guy. And Shy Guy never stops, never talks, and just is like, oh, I called him Shy Guy. But to learn their names. And then week two, I dared you. I said, have an unhurried conversation. You know, that's what I look and I see Jesus so many times. In the busyness of his life, just stopping to talk to people. Whether it was at a well or pulling Oliver out of a tree. Not Oliver, Zacchaeus. Oliver climbs trees all the time. But just people that he would stop and he had time for them. I challenge you to have that unhurried conversation. In week number three, I challenge you to ask a question that means something. What is the normal question we ask when we see somebody?
How are you?
Good. See you later. All done, right? Good. Or you get that occasional person who's like honest, and you're like, oh, geez. What did I just get myself into, right? You're like, how are you? And you keep walking, and they're like, well, you know, really, you're walking past. I didn't mean, how are you? That's just how we say hello, right? And so I said, ask a question that actually means something. One that I often ask is, hey, do you live here in Westbrook? They say, yeah, I live in Westbrook, and I'll be like, cool. My wife and I moved here 15 years ago. We live over near Canal School. Where are you? We just start having a conversation. It's that easy. It's that easy. You ever watch that show, Undercover Boss? I love that show. How many of you guys watched it? All right. More of you need to watch more TV. Undercover Boss was an awesome show, and I loved it because these bosses just wanted to see how their organizations were working. And so they'd go in, and I was always so impressed with the conversations they would have with their workers. And the workers would tell them where they were living. They'd tell them, my Nana has been sick and I'm trying to get extra hours. They'd tell them the things that they were doing, right? I just loved that. And then in week four, I said, take the first step. I dare you to take the first step. Because somebody has got to do it, and it's usually you, right? Some of you did it. Some of you are still sitting in the driveway contemplating. Ladies, why do you sit in the car for 10 minutes before you come in? I don't understand. Anybody, your wives do that? You're like, you see them drive in.
You're like, on your phone with the angel.
You're like, what are you doing? What's happening out there? I get home and I just get out of my car and go in the house.
It's like, bracing ourselves.
Facing yourself, bracing yourself, yeah. I've heard. This is the only moment I get to myself. So today, not about the first step. Today is about the 14th step. The 14th step. The one nobody throws a parade for. Now, speaking of parades, we had a lot of parades yesterday around our country, and we had 24-hour coverage of, you know, they're having a storm in Colorado and then a storm in Washington, D.C. A lot of our kids and families went down to the Capitol to march in the parade and then got canceled because it was too hot and they didn't want everybody passing out. But those parades, we look at and say, this is a celebration of something happening. But we don't tend to have a lot of parades for things that are just consistently happening all the time. We don't have, well, it's Tuesday, time to have Tuesday parade. It's Wednesday, time to get everybody together and just line up and clap for the kids walking by with little banners. I think it would be cool. I'd like to do that. But here's the truth. Nobody tells you, this is the truth, nobody tells you going in. The first step is the fun part. It's the part with adrenaline. It's the part where you're a little nervous about, but then you have a feeling of accomplishment after. The 14th step doesn't feel that way. It just starts being the consistence. It feels like that first step is something you could put on your resume. Friend maker. Woohoo! Look at me. What's hard is showing up again and again and again on the boring Tuesday where nothing's happening and you'd rather just go get the mail and not talk to anybody. You'd rather just go back inside where's air conditioned. And nobody inside, you're hoping nobody wants anything from you. So here, I want you to think of somebody in your life, not family, that you genuinely trust. Your phone rings at 2 a.m., you see their name, and you're like, I'm definitely, answering. You got that person in your head? A lot of us do. We have that person in our head, and I bet you that person did not earn your trust by doing one incredible thing. I bet they didn't earn that relationship you have with them by doing one amazing thing. It was a course of building that up. They earned it by being the same person, reliable, showing up the same way, day after day, maybe for years, until you stop being surprised by their kindness, by who they were and who they are. It's the whole ball game. Right there. Trust isn't a lightning strike. It's more like sediment, you know, layers of being built up. My wife, Robin, she makes the most incredible cakes. Mm-hmm. They're incredible. And she makes them sometimes of three, four layers. And it's not like one layer is good, and the next layer, really good, but the third layer, bad, kind of good. It's just consistent all the way through that you're going, good, 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 good. She makes trustworthy cakes. They are so good. It's not in our relationships as we're consistent with one another. We're building layers, layers that are built on love. Our text, Galatians 6. 9 and 10. And then we're going to look a little bit at the parable of the gardener sowing the seeds. Galatians says this. So, let's not get tired of doing what's good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we don't give up. Therefore, whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone. Especially those in our family of faith. Especially. Three things jump out at me here. Three things. The first is that Paul says, let's not get tired. Because the reality is, it happens. We get tired. You know, we're exhausted. We're emotionally not ready for this. We're like, ugh. I've had people tell me, I don't have time for friends. I just don't have time for any friends. And I challenge them and I say, well, wait just a minute. Because Jesus said that that's the most important thing. That we love our neighbors. That we have time for those relationships. That we go and preach the gospel. Now, I think a lot of Christians are great at preaching. But that's where going ends. The thing is, when Jesus says, go and do it, he's meaning like you've been watching me do it for the last 3 years together. Go and preach the gospel with your life that backs it up. The people that you're talking to aren't surprised by what you're saying. And they listen because you have earned the right to be heard. You've earned the right to be heard. Now, if I came and I talked to Barb about all the advantages of joining a solar wind farm, she would listen to me politely, and she might even consider what I had to say. But that poor kid on the scooter that just comes door to door to door and asks to see your electric bill, what do you do to him? Get out of here. Or you see them coming on your Ring camera and you're laying on the floor. Everybody down! Nobody's home. The cars are out there. Nobody's home. Dog barking. Right? That's because of that relationship we have. That when I share something with her, she's going to say, that's Scott talking to me about this. And see, sharing the gospel, that's part of it. It's part of that truth of that relationship. So Paul doesn't say, in case you get weary. He assumes it. You're going to get tired of it, he says. You'll have neighbors who don't seem to notice. You'll have people that you try to be kind to who are walls, and they don't reciprocate it in any way. They're just like, boom. Remember that neighbor I told you about in my neighborhood where I was golden retrievering. Hi, I'm Scott. We just moved here, and it's good to meet you. And his response was, you know, when I moved here, they told me people here keep to themselves. He just deadpanned me. I was like, oh. I go off like, sheesh, okay. What happens? It happens. Paul's advice for that moment? Not try harder. It's just, don't quit. Hey, you see that guy? I've been 14 years now saying, waving to him as he drives by. He now waves back. That's good. We're making progress, 14 years. Making progress. The second thing I see that jumps out, the second thing, it says, at just the right time, blessing. At just the right time, blessing. Now, it doesn't say do it for blessing. But it does say that when we are doing good, then when we're showing the love of Christ, when we're living like Christ, at just the right time, blessing is going to come. You know, for me, I've found that sometimes that blessing comes when it says the perfect time. It's like, it's right when I've started doubting everything. It's right when Robin and I in our relationship really don't really like each other much. We still love each other, but we've been married 42 years. I'm annoying you, you're annoying me. And you go in that room and I'll stay over here in this room. We still love each other. If the rain is falling, I'm still going to hold the umbrella over her head. I'm going to be like, Archer. But still that response in love, right? A lot of us who have been married for years, you know what I'm talking about. Those of you who haven't been married that long, when you hit that period where you're starting to look at each other and go, I'm never seeing you. You did. You saw something in each other. And you're going to get through it if you don't quit. You just keep going. Saying when Robin and I had been married, what was it, 8 years, 9 years, when we looked at each other and said, do we want to keep living like this? Like roommates. He said, no, we want to fix it. And we took steps to do that. This is a rabbit hole that I did not plan. So those don't quit, Paul says. And then at just the right time, blessing is going to come. There's a payoff. It's a harvest. And it's not the harvest that we've always thought it will be. We've always been taught through one single lens that the harvest that this, we're talking about, this blessing, is only that person is going to suddenly come and follow Christ. Right? Not what Paul is saying here. Paul is saying that a blessing will come. I'm not saying we don't share Christ. I'm saying that we do it long enough that we start getting a reputation for somebody saying, hey, that person, there's something about them. They seem to treat me like I'm worthwhile. They seem to care about me for no reason. And they keep doing it. And they're consistent. And that's at the point that people will say, well, tell me the reason that you're like this. Paul said, that when they say, tell me the reason for the hope that lives within you, that we answer with gentleness and respect. You know that gentleness and respect piece? That's not a car salesman. That's not a timeshare salesman. There's no gentleness or respect a lot of times in that area, right? It's push, push, push. But it's that gentleness and respect at just the right time, blessing. Your job is to survive the gap in that when we talk about Jesus being planting and sowing the seed. Our job as farmers is that we keep doing it and seeing it and survive the gap between planting and seeing the thing. I remember last year when Roland was talking about planting and gardening and plants. And I started thinking about my garden. Do you know that I start in the fall? Start planning for next year in the fall. You know, one of the weirdest questions I ever asked my wife was, hey, can your friend Darlene get me a bucket of goat poop? Words you never thought you would say. But through my research, I found that goat poop, it doesn't stink as bad as manure. It takes longer to break down, and it lasts longer. But if you put it in right before you put your plants in, it hasn't had time to break down, so it's going to kill it. So Robin had to go to school and ask her friend, hey, is there any way you can get some goat poop for my husband? Because she's like involved at a farm and all that. She was like, sure. Robin brought me home, or Darlene brought me a nice big bucket of goat poop for my garden. And I tilled that stuff in, spread it out, tilled it in, and then I took straw and I covered it. You know what they call it? Putting your garden to bed. Oh, because I love my garden. I put my garden to bed. I put straw all over it. Now go to sleep. Go to sleep, because what's coming is an absolute nightmare. It's called Maine winter. But you're going to be okay. And I love my garden. So then comes the spring. And I start having goals. Like this year, one of my goals was, I'm going to take those wood pallets and I'm going to make some pollinator gardens. I'm going to take fabric and I'm going to wrap it around, then put the dirt in it, and then the flowers will pop out from inside of the pallets. And it's an awesome thing. Look online. It's really cool. That was an awesome goal. I didn't do it. Sometimes we have goals we don't do, right? That's okay. That's okay. Well, I start planning, and I even turn the soil again, maybe add some soil. And then you know what I do? I plan for the weeds. I plan for the weeds. I plan for the hard times. And so I start planning. I expect the bugs. And I like to do the organic route and not put chemicals on and stuff. So I'm planning to do the right mix of Dawn dish soap with water and all that. And I'm doing all that and I'm planning for it. And then I plant seeds or seedlings. I water, I feed, I pull weeds. And you know what? Most of the time it goes well. But sometimes it dies. Sometimes the plants die. And do you know what some of you are most afraid of in the garden? I had two of them last year. Bug, not only a bug. You ever seen one of those tomato hornworms? They're like this big around. They're long. They're creepy. They got antennas and little red feet. And they are the coolest looking. But they can devour an entire plant overnight. Those things go crazy. I expect them, but I don't give up. I don't give up. I water, I feed, I pull weeds, and then I see results. When I see those results, you know what that is? Blessing. Nothing better. I've had two little cherry yellow tomatoes that have already turned. Popping both of those into my mouth. That's the blessing. That's the blessing. So neighboring is, it's like planting that garden. It's like planting that garden. You don't know really what's going to come up, what's not, but the blessing is going to come. The third thing that I see in this passage in Galatians, it says, whenever we have the opportunity. You know what that means? Neighboring isn't a program that you run. It's not forced. It's not forced. It's not obnoxious. And I'm guilty of that. I'm an obnoxious neighbor because I don't give up. I'm like, but it's so fun because now my neighbor two doors down, she does the same thing. We'll be sitting in our Adirondack chairs in the front lawn, and one of our neighbors who has always been kind of quiet, we now have her coming out and talking to us, because she'd get home and we would literally yell, like if it was Elizabeth, we'd be like, "Hi, Elizabeth! Did you have a good day?
Yeah.
How was it?
Great.
Awesome! So good to see you. Have a good night." And she'd go in the door. We're yelling that across our neighborhood so that people are used to it now. Sometimes we're a little too much. We're doing too much. But it's a posture. Neighboring is a posture that you keep. It's a lifestyle. You're not manufacturing moments. You're just staying awake for the ones that show up naturally. Naturally. See, you know that Paul wasn't inventing this idea when he talks about that? About continuing to do good, seeing the blessing come and do it whenever it comes up. He wasn't inventing it. He was quoting a farmer manual that Jesus gave in Mark chapter 4. Jesus said this in Mark 4:3. Listen. I liked it when Jesus would say, "Listen." Because there were big crowds and they were always talking, I'm sure. "Listen. A farmer went out to plant some seed. But Jesus then tells them that this farmer walks through four different types of dirt. He says, at first the seed fell on the hard-packed footpath where the birds just eat the seed before it does anything. Nada. Nothing. Nope. That's basically, we were told people keep to themselves. Sometimes the seed falls on that hard ground and you go, you could stop right then and go, "Oh, I guess it's not working. I give up." And go back into your house. Nope. The second patch fell on rocky but shallow soil. Rocky, shallow soil where the seed sprouts fast and then dies faster. It's exciting, but then disappointing. And maybe we've started a really good friendship. We're just getting off it, and then they move. Or there's this thing that happened, like life has changed. You know, like, what happened? He says the third was a weedy patch where thorns choke out anything trying to grow. That happens so often. You know what those weeds and thorns are? I think they are us becoming so convinced that life is just too hectic. That it's too hectic. We don't have time. And we all have the same amount of time that every person who's walked the earth has had since the beginning of time. We have the same amount of time. We just got to determine how we spend it, right? How we spend it. And he says, and finally, good soil. Some of the seed fell on the good soil, where the seed takes root, takes its time, and eventually produces a crop. 30, 60, even 100 times what was planted. A friendship I did not expect. A relationship that's important to me that I didn't really expect. It's now a blessing and a true friendship. I love that illustration. So don't grow weary doing good. It's not about, remember, it's not about strings attached. We don't do it. Neighboring isn't a moment. It's a lifestyle. It's being like Jesus. Sometimes rocky soil, you invite somebody to come over and they say, "That sounds great. Yeah, I'll do that. I'm planning on it." And then they don't show. You invite them to sketch And then all of a sudden, I just couldn't make it. You know, it happens. It happens, and then we just keep... Whoosh, whoosh. Yep. Don't get weary doing good. Sometimes you're talking to a polite wall. Sometimes you bring somebody food, and you get just a nod instead of even some communication. What would happen to our life if we really reimagined the whole love your neighbor as yourself being what the whole of the law and the prophets hang on? Here's what I love about the farmer and Jesus story. He doesn't test the soil first. He doesn't walk his field, take samples, and only plant where he's guaranteed a return. We do that sometimes with people. Oh, they'd be a good one. He just scatters footpath, rocks, weeds, good dirt. All of it gets seed. And some of that seed is going nowhere, and he knows it going in. And he throws it anyway. That's what neighboring is. We don't get to pre-qualify. We just keep sowing. And we find that trust grows through repeated presence. Our repeated presence. The farmer plants seed by taking God's word to others, it says. But that's word and deed. Word and deed. And then, lastly, faithfulness beats intensity. Faithfulness beats intensity. Making it a habit that they know we are people who are neighboring. Where they don't really know the answer. Why are you like this? Until they ask us. And then we share a little bit about our faith, a little bit about how important it is to us. And we judge based on their reaction to that. We say, well, what do you think? Yeah, that's good for you, but not for me. Okay. Still going to love you. I love what happened at Westbrook Together Day. Westbrook Together Day was so funny. Well, I'm with Robin. I think it was Westbrook Together Day. And this woman comes up, and Robin sees her, and they smile. And the woman is dressed in a full hijab. Yeah, she's Arabic, Muslim, most likely. And she comes over, and she smiles, and Robin smiles. They say hi to each other, and this woman gives Robin a hug. And I say, wow, you guys are hugging friends? Robin said, apparently we are now. She said, I see her every morning when I'm out on my walk, and I smile and I say hello. And I do that every day. And now we are hugging friends. That's all it took. Yep. You know what's next? I don't know what's next. Maybe they'll get invited over, maybe to our house, or we'll go over to theirs. I would love to hear all about their customs and why they believe what they believe. We just show them love. You know, intensity is that bonfire. It's a bonfire. But we all are more dependent on a pilot light. Right? That pilot light's out, we're in trouble. But that small flame continues. When I look at our chances to neighbor, and remember that neighboring isn't just a moment, it's a lifestyle, it's being like Jesus. Don't give up. Don't give up. The challenge this week. One, intentional act of love or kindness for the same person twice within the week. Remember, it doesn't mean you have to bake them two apple pies. It's getting too big. It doesn't have to be perfect. It can be two hellos, two conversations. Now, there's something happening within our church I must address. From time to time, I would get anonymous letters. And Robin had one for me one time, and she said, there's no return address on this. I don't want to give it to you. Because it said, Reverend Scott Lynn Scott. I was like, oh, crap. There's going to be somebody who goes at me. And I open it up, and it is somebody who goes at me. I'm like, why didn't they take the time to cut out the letters from magazines and stuff? It's usually that bad, very discouraging. And so she came walking in first. She said, I got something that's not signed. I was like, oh, great. Give it to me. And it was just like, hey, just wanted to tell you, we love you. I'm so thankful for you at our church. Like, what? A, A good unsigned thing? How could that be? Well, I've gotten 3 or 4 of them. So there's a movement going on where you guys are encouraging me. I don't know who started it, but thanks. You're starting to turn the tide. I'm starting to look forward to unsigned things. That's just a way of showing a little bit of love that encourages so much. You make it a pattern. Let's close in prayer. Lord, I pray that you would save us from the weariness that makes us quit before you can even bring a harvest, before the blessing even arrives. I pray you'd just give us some long obedience. Give us, and I'm scared to pray this because they always say don't pray for patience, but I don't believe that. Give us the patience to be present in the small ways, day after day, without needing to see the result right now, Lord. We trust that you're working in ways that we can't see, in soil we can't see into. So God, I pray that you would help us keep planting, no strings attached, because you're changing us into your likeness as we love our neighbors with no strings attached. Lord, I pray you bless our food, our fellowship together, that you would just flavor our conversations, and let us dare to say hello to somebody we don't know. In Jesus' name, amen.